Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Podcast where two bearded film fans watch the best and the worst horror movies of all time. My name is Luke Condo with the Kate, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
Ben Errington.
Mr. Ben Errington. And also our semi-regular co-host, Mr.
Andy Conjure at Tenor. Hello, guys.
How's it going?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
The last time we saw you, you were in that room, I think. It was over Skype.
Yeah, same room.
Same t-shirt on, I think, as well. It's not been washed, has it?
Oh yeah, this is my I'm like Charlie Brown, just open up the cupboard, same outfit.
He's like Charlie Brown in so many
less
ways.
Less depressed.
So Today we are in the 90s still, talking about the sort of, we call it like the 90s with the sort of bad, poor decade of horror, but there's some good gems in there. I think we found a couple of gems. We found a lot of coal, but there's some gems as well. What did we talk about last week?
We talked about Deep Rising last week. The 90s gets a little bit of stick for being a bit naff for horror. People see it as a bit of a lull in horror, and then I guess as we got to the end of the decade, it kind of picked up a bit, but then it went all slashery again. Mm. But yeah, I think there's a load of gems around. I've been nuzzling around like a pig looking for truffles. Nuzzling. I've watched a few recently, and but this was probably my favourite of the last few I've seen. So
yeah, it's interesting.
Yes.
So before we talk about the film today, should we talk? We weren't going to call it Guffs. We were going to call it something else, right? Or was it just old Guffs?
Just old Guffs.
It's so hard to move away from the term now.
Other horror stuff. Horror Guff. But then we don't limit it to just horror stuff. What have you been up to, mate?
What about the stuff and the guff? Then we can talk about good stuff and the guffs.
And the guff. Good, the stuff and the guff. I like that. Yeah, okay, Remember it for next week.
Welcome to the stuff and the guff. So has anyone really got any stuff that they want to share?
Or any guffs they want to share?
Or any guffs that you want to bring to the table. Andy?
I've got some horror gubbins that I've been getting into recently. I think since roughly the last time I came and joined you guys, obviously Resident Evil 2 had just come out. I've been on a little bit of a marathon since that happened. I managed to do
That's
zero...
That's why you haven't changed your clothes.
Just before it is, been in the world of survival horror since.
Yeah.
So I did zero just before the remake of 2 came out. After that, I went into the remake of the original, and then I did Code Veronica. That was hard to go back to. Probably the one that's been polished up the least. The tank controls are so hard. So hard. I just ran into the arms of many zombies.
Was it a remaster you played with that?
It was a remaster of Code Veronica X from the Xbox 360, so it's slightly polished up from the Dreamcast, but... The controls haven't been updated, so it was tough to get into. But it was all right. Then I did 4. I did Resident Evil Revelations, and I've just started Revelations 2 that I'd missed at the time. But, Barry Burton Menswear's in there. He's great.
Barry Burton.
So he's good. His daughter's in it. Claire Redfield's back. It's got some nice little mechanics in there. It's a lot of fun.
So which one's been your favourite?
It's hard to say. Like, I really enjoyed playing 4 again, but yeah, having gone into it after playing like some of the old ones that had the like the original sort of survival horror feel to it, it is easy to see why people went, oh, it's not really the same anymore, because it does play a lot more like an action game.
Yeah.
There are some good survival horror bits, aren't there, in Resident Evil 4? Like, yeah. Some bits that really stick out, like the regenerator bits and...
I'd say towards the end, when you get like a little minecart section and things like that, when it feels very arcadey and, you know, like a full-on action thing, and when you're like karate kicking hundreds of dudes over, that does seem a little bit less like horror-y. But
I've seen the chainsaw guy with the Hessian masking. I remember that being terrifying. We just see that chainsaw in the distance.
The early bit where they come after you like you're in that village and it's very sort of claustrophobic.
Yeah.
I'm finding Revelations 2's got some different ways of doing environments. There was like quite a big open forest early on, and that still felt claustrophobic because it was dark and there's like fog and there are things coming out from the trees, and it was a nice change of environment there. But to be honest, I'm still riding high off that remake of 2. It was very, very, very good.
Okay. Are you going to go on to 5 next?
Yeah, you think? 5 next, and then 6, which I only really got about 10 minutes into originally, and then I hated so much that I gave up on. So we get through that. And then 7, I'll do that last. I did about half of 7, but then something else came out and I lost momentum and tried to go back into it. I was like, I've forgotten how to control this game, so I'm just going to go back into it again.
We played a bit of 7 in VR, and that was... That was kind of amazing. Like, we didn't play all of it because it makes you a bit sick. But like, the actual textures when you're sort of inside, you know, in like the living room and the kitchen, you open the fridge and you see like little bugs crawling around. It's quite amazing, like a technical, like, masterpiece. Just looking at the sort of the grime and the rot of it all. But
I would like to play it in VR, but I just don't think I have the cojones.
I'm not sure I can take it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I'll be all right, but I do get a bit invested in VR, and you know, and I get a bit confused in my surroundings as well. I'll punch a wall, or suddenly I'm lying face down on the floor.
See, that's what I'd worry about. Not so much playing the game, is that I'd be playing and I'd get really into it, and then like one of the dogs had brushed past my leg, and my wife would tell me my heart would explode and I'd die.
That could happen.
He died doing what he loved,
playing VR.
Shitting himself to death.
My friend Fru had a mod for Alien Isolation on his PC, and we played VR that for a little bit as well. And that was pretty terrifying. But like, I had to, the worst thing about it though is just when you're like moving forward, when the games aren't designed for VR, especially when you're moving forward, it's that same feeling you get when you sort of, you know, when you're leaning back in a chair and you fall back. It's that same feeling when you're moving forward, as if you're falling away from the screen because you're not actually sort of moving. And it does really... I thought I got really sick quite quickly. Queasy.
I think Resident Evil 7, they did some stuff to try and limit that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they tried not smooth the motion. I think if you ever have any vertical movement, it just blacks out and then reopens again when you level, because apparently that's really what makes you sick. But I don't have a VR headset, so I haven't got to worry about
it. How do you move forwards in Resident Evil 7? Because sometimes in VR games you sort of like
teleport, don't you?
Teleport almost. Is that how it is?
No, I think VR, I mean, Resident Evil 7 I think was standard, but Resident Evil 7 is quite, apart from when you turn, it won't turn like that, it will like block turn. But it's quite a slow game, Resident Evil 7. You don't feel like you're moving that fast. Do you know what I mean? Whereas Alien Isolation, you could sprint, and it was that's something that sort of made you feel.
That's rough.
Even the running in Resident Evil 7 is a bit like just a light jog, and
someone's
trying to kill you, and you're just like, come on, get out of it.
Don't want to run in the house.
Late for the bus sort of run. Yeah.
late for the bus, but you're probably going to miss it sort of run.
And die. Yeah.
Or just crossing the road when there's someone that's waved you across. You're like,
What about you, Ben? Got any stuff or guff?
I've not really been playing all that much or watching all that much. I finished The Umbrella Academy and I read the first volume of The Umbrella Academy comics. Just to round that off nicely. Definitely want to watch some more of that. I think that's, I mean, that's great. Andy, you've seen it as well, right?
Yeah, it's a great show. I bought the comic, but I haven't started it yet. But Yeah, it's a good show.
It's good to see what bits they've picked out of the comic book and put into the show, and how they've sort of elaborated on some bits which are really minimal in the comic, but they've really expanded them in the show. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. And I mean, I'm always a bit, it takes a lot for me to really get into a new show. But yeah, I really liked it. I think I preferred it to any of the Marvel shows that I've seen. I think it's like a really cool, as I think I said to you, I think the only thing that I found a little bit frustrating was the amount of music cues. I felt like there was like a new song for almost every scene, and it just felt a little bit like not needed so much, but I guess, you know, it's a minor gripe.
Yeah, I was surprised with how little, you know, extra comic is already finished, because when I went to pick up the volumes, I thought, oh, I'll buy the first few volumes of this. But looking on old Comixology, only the first one's been collected. The second arc hasn't finished yet, by the look of things. It's not been collected, is it?
It's not, because Gerard Way is now, he was actually writing Doom Patrol nowadays, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think he's still writing Umbrella Academy.
Oh, I think he's on hiatus.
He's heading up something in DC as well, is that right?
We did, it was the sort of the weird, I can't remember the name for it, but it was Doom Patrol and like three other titles. But there was all the sort of more stranger, like Doom Patrol was almost Dada-ist in the sense that no two panels really made sense with each other. Like you just sort of there's no sort of linear narrative to it. But it seemed like a lot of fun.
I'm trying to think of the range. Is it the Young Animal range? Is that what it's called?
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah.
With Gerard Way, there's a lot, even an Umbrella Academy, there's a lot of like really out there stuff, and it's good to see that they kept a lot of it in some way or another in the show.
Yeah.
Like there's stuff where you go, that is pretty much mental. That's so bonkers that we'll probably just not put that in the TV show, but they do kind of keep a lot of it in there.
I like it. I like when they do stuff like that. Have you seen Happy? That's another great
adaptation. No, I haven't. I think you did. I think you.
I've been meaning to watch it.
Do you know? You know what it's about? So it's about a guy who his little daughter gets kidnapped by some serial killer, and then he teams up with his little daughter's imaginary friend, played by Patton Oswalt, his little unicorn, to find her. It's a really great concept, and it's a bloody good show as well.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to give that a go. What about you, Luke? Any gufferage? Stuff or guffage?
So I rewatched Get Out as it's on Netflix, and
Get Out,
mate, it's even better the second time. Like it's such a good film. I was watching it thinking, the first time I watched it, I was like, this is good, but it's not like as good as people are sort of, you know, lauding it with. But this time I was like, it actually is good, as those people were saying.
It actually is good.
There's like bits, like really sort of beautiful cinematic moments where he goes into the sunken place for the first time, and there's like the really haunting violin sounds. There's some real tension that still got me this same time around. I was only sort of half watching it because I just thought, you know, I've seen it before. I'll just sort of dick around on my phone while it's on. But I just found myself watching it like from start to finish again. And it's just great. It's a great, great film.
So we got us coming out on the thing is the 22nd of March, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, obviously, we'll have to do an episode on that. I think it's been shown at SWX.
Yeah, I've heard it's quite different to Get Out.
Yeah.
Like people trying to get in or something.
People trying to get in. Yeah, it's called Get In.
Yeah.
SXSW. Did I tell you my mum was watching it and she texted me? Did I tell you that?
Well, Get Out.
She texted me saying, I'm watching the film Get Out, and Ben, please tell me, does he get out? That's what she said. And I just said, Mom, I can't ruin it for you. But yeah, she really enjoyed it, and she's probably the kind of person who would go, nah, didn't really like that.
Did you see what the original ending was supposed to be? So, you know, he's got out of the house, and he's sort of driving away and stuff, and then he's strangling the girlfriend character, and then the police lights show up. Originally, it's supposed to be the actual police who turned up and then blamed him because he's a black man.
That's exactly what I thought the ending was going to be.
Yeah, when
I saw the flashing lights, I was like, oh, for God's sake. The police officer from earlier is now going to. It felt like that was it. And it was, I guess it was a nice little spin on that, but at the same time, it was a bit like.
Yeah. Well, Jason Blum apparently said to Jordan Peele, look, you can't have the guy go through all this and then do that to him at the end. So he changed it.
I don't know. I mean, that's the most memorable things about.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense. And yeah, it sort of goes full circle.
If they did it, it would have been the Mist style.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like the Mist, the Wicker Man.
Ending.
And it would have been one of my favourite films if they did that. It's like the bleaker the ending, the more I get very titillated.
Titillated by the bleak.
Yeah.
You get back from the cinema with a big smile on your face. Cat's like, oh, how was the film? Oh, it's brilliant. Really horrible, grim ending. I mean, such a good
horrible,
mood.
Grim ending. Right, cup of tea.
Yeah, okay. So in the end, everyone died, and the world's ruined.
But other than that, no, nothing really. I've been reading some stuff, and that's about it. So anyone else got anything they want to chuck in there before we move on to the main course?
I guess
move on, I'm starving.
Listening to your list, Ben, of 90s films, and we'll talk this later, but with Luke and disagree with you on Congo is absolutely horrible.
Yeah.
Oh, no. It's brilliant.
I've not seen it in a long, long time, but I remember.
Wait. What are you disagreeing with me on? The fact that I said it wasn't a horror film.
Well, interestingly, I mean, I looked at the genre.
People's eyes out.
It's horror listed.
It's not listed. Sorry, it's listed as action mystery or thriller mystery. I know it was mystery, not horror, but like I remember it being horrific. Like,
well, I'm not saying it's bad. That's not what I said. I said it was bad?
No.
I do love Congo, but I think I would still say it's not. I mean, it's no more a horror film than Jurassic Park is.
Okay, I'll give you that. As long as we're not, as long as we're not, speaking ill of Congo.
Oh no, absolutely not.
Those
gorillas,
I
love Congo.
They've got no Mbongo.
Amy loves you. Yeah, I mean the gorillas are horrific.
They're bad gorillas.
You say you've seen Rampage, Ben?
Yeah.
Okay. What did you think to? I'm sure we talked about it actually a while back. What did you think to Rampage again?
What did I think to what?
Rampage.
I was. That's as far as I could. It was enjoyable for what it was for the time I was sat in the cinema, but it pretty much vanished from my head immediately.
Forgot it immediately.
I'm just thinking of a really good pairing with Congo. Those two films.
Rampage and
Monkey
Congo.
Shines.
Yeah.
John Carpenter's Monkey Shines. Or is it Wes Craven?
I've never seen
I don't
Monkey
think
Shines.
I've seen No, I don't think I have either. That's definitely a horror, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the Monkey Servant, right?
Yeah, the guy is paralyzed and he gets a monkey assistant, but then the monkey.
It's not John Carpenter.
It's George A. Romero.
Yes.
I was wrong on both counts. Yeah, it's great.
Okay,
maybe that should be one future then. Maybe we should just do a monkey horror.
Yeah,
I'm always up for monkey horror, mate.
Yeah, it's weird because like that monkey story I know through The Simpsons, and most horror things I know through Treehouse of Horror. Like that's our sort of first.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So many amazing references.
But not this film, not the Relic. The Relic has never been done by The Simpsons, unfortunately. But I mean, The Relic. Do you want to tell us a bit about it, Ben? I've got to say, the little blurb for it sounds way more interesting than the film actually comes out.
Okay, so The Relic is a 1997 science fiction horror film. Directed by Peter Hyams and based on the best-selling novel Relic by Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child. Film stars Penelope Ann Miller, Tom Sizemore, Linda Hunt. A homicide detective and an anthropologist try to destroy a South American lizard-like god who's on a people-eating rampage in a Chicago museum.
That's what I mean. How good does that sound? It sounds insane.
It sounds badass.
Yeah. But so it's got 34% of Rotten Tomatoes. Which is slightly more than Deep Rising. It's got 5.7 out of 10 on IMDb, which is slightly less than Deep Rising. So the critics love this one. Well, they like it more, but the audience aren't as big on it. I mean, have you seen this one before? You must have done, right?
Yeah, so I've seen this quite a few times. This was another one of those films that I was introduced to by my mum. And I think she's still like a big fan of it. I think when I told her I was watching it, she was like, oh, I got that on DVD. So yeah, I've got. I remember that this is another one of those films which I remember seeing really young, and I remember like covering my eyes at certain bits. Like, so I guess I'm probably like what 10, 11, maybe a little bit older. Covering my eyes at certain bits, so there's still bits I see now and I go, oh yeah, I could. I remember hiding from this bit, but now I'm brave enough to watch.
Now I'm a big boy.
Now I'm a big boy.
Big boy now.
And I think it was just like. It was the setting for me. The setting, the fact it takes place in a museum, I thought was really cool because, you know, we've all been to museums. We've all been to museums and kind of like wandered around the corner on your own a little bit and wandered into a creepy area
lizard
with like
god
lizard like gods and stuffed animals. And I don't mean and we've all done that, and it's kind of like there's something quite you understand what that sort of fear feels like. And I think the director originally wrote this screenplay after he'd had a dream when he was younger where he'd been locked in a museum overnight, and there was this big diorama of like a whale and a big squid up like hanging from the ceiling, and in his dream he was concentrating on something else, and when he looked back the squid was gone. So I think he'd held on to that creepy idea and made a film of it based
I didn't know if like, you were making that up as you sort of were saying that.
No. And that was true. And
you're going to take a left turn and saying that squid was in Deep Rising.
That squid ended up in Deep Rising. Yeah. But yeah, so obviously it's something quite close to the director's heart. And I think the creature design in terms of the monster we get is incredibly unique. And I think that's what I always liked about it. Like, it wasn't just a run-of-the-mill stand. You know, it could have been just a giant lizard or anything like that. Yeah. It wasn't run-of-the-mill. It was very unique. And the film, well, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but it's so dark throughout. Like, I always used to think, but when I watched it recently, I thought, is it just lit like with natural light? Because sometimes you're literally like, what the hell is going on? Yeah. You can't see anything.
I think that's on purpose, right?
It's got to be on purpose. I don't know if they did it on purpose to kind of like maybe hide the CGI, but I think. A lot of the creature design is really good as well. So, like, obviously, it's practical for close-ups, and it's CGI for the bigger shots, which is obviously very, very Jurassic Park. And I think some guys who worked on Jurassic Park worked on this as well. It's not a perfect film by any stretch of the imagination, but I think in terms of the origin of the creature and the story of the creature and why it's doing what it's doing, and obviously the big reveal of the creature, I think is incredibly unique.
Is there a big reveal of the creature? There's no like, I don't remember there being a big sort of.
Well, sorry, the big reveal of the origin of the creature.
Oh, okay, sorry.
What the creature actually is, I guess, which I understand was a much bigger reveal in the book. I think it was revealed right at the end of the book. Okay, whereas this, I think you're slowly drip fed to you throughout the story. I mean, you come to understand a bit, I guess, from the intro. But
yeah,
I think it's a really good creature feature. It's one that always kind of creeped me out a bit. I don't think it's aged particularly badly either. As I said, I watched
out of all these 90s films, I think this one's actually aged probably the best.
Yeah, definitely. And as I said, it's a unique setting, a unique monster. And even though it's not the most, you know, engaging, it's not the best film, but I think because of those elements, I think it's still a really enjoyable experience.
I mean, out of these 90s horror films, it's definitely the one that seems to be taking itself the most seriously in terms of like they've really drilled down the fact that it's a Chicago film, and this is a unique setting, it's a unique creature idea. There's tons of locations, tons of characters. It feels like a much bigger film than it is, but I was pretty confused at times, I've got to say.
Little bits of Chicago history that just get thrown in there with like the man at the docks that goes, oh, these coal tunnels, they were built in the late 1800s.
And on your left, you will see the... it was a lot of that. I think it was too many characters. I don't remember the creature being so obsessed with lopping off heads when I was a kid. That's like how he kills everyone in this.
He whips you'd remember super that. Quick as well.
Yeah, you'd I thought that'd be a key that. Thing, but I thought it was just sort of, you know, mold people. But no, it's got like
thing mandibles
designed to lop off heads. Like that's its prime purpose. Also, I remember really liking this kid. I think he just hit all the notes of like it's quite gritty and dark, and it's a nice creature feature, and it's like plenty of gory bits in there. But it's the tone of it I haven't seen Species in a long time, but in my head, it's kind of like Species. Like this.
Oh, you'll have to go back to that again.
It's been a long time.
The Relic has a little special place in my heart. This was the first 15 certificate film I ever went to see at the cinema. Not to admit to crimes on the podcast,
how old
guys.
Were you?
Don't call the police. But I looked at the date this film came out in May 1997, and I would have been 13 years and 9 months old. Sucked in, UCI Tamworth.
Did you have a little bit of stubble drawn on when you went in?
I just talked about like work as I went, queuing up. So lads, are we all ready for our GCSEs quite soon that we'll be taking? Oh, those mock exams are real tough.
But I mean, it came out. Back then, the films used to come out like in England, like about a year later or something, and then like,
the
2 years after that, though it's like on DVD or VHS. I mean, they used to take ages. I used to remember like, when I saw a film like a poster, and I used to think, okay, I better just forget about that, and then remember it again in a couple of years' time when it's out on DVD.
Yeah, just remember it.
I remember my dad went for a business trip to the US in the very early 2000s, and I was like, please get me X-Men on DVD while you're there. Of course, it didn't work on a DVD player. I had to do it on the PC. It was a right old kerfuffle.
Yeah.
Stitch yourself right up.
I know, mugged off.
So, key players in this film. There's not really anyone I reckon, apart from Linda Hunt, who, the small woman with glasses, designed superior costumes. She turns up.
I recognize Tom Sizemore, an absolute legend of them.
Oh, okay. Well,
acting shops for cinema, name for porn.
I did
I think he went into porn, didn't he, eventually?
I did Google him. I didn't see any porn. But he isn't dead. So I really get sad when I see the people are dead in films when I start Googling them. But this other woman, Penelope Ann Miller, who plays the main sort of woman, she's in tons of stuff. She's in like Riverdale and stuff. I don't recognise her, I don't watch it, but I like to see that she's got a flourishing career. Like
she was in Kindergarten Cop.
She was, yeah. I like to see that and I think, yeah, okay, good on you. But I hate seeing a dwindling career and I just think, oh, poor. Just feel bad for them. And then they die. It's even worse.
And then they die. Well, she's got a couple of films, it looks like.
She's got a couple of years left and then she's probably going to go as well.
Well, her latest film is called Deep Crack.
Did she go porn as well with Sizemore? Is that
well, who's to say?
Sizemore production.
Sizemore did do like the Tom Sizemore sex tape. I don't know if you remember that.
Do
you remember that? I don't think I saw it, but like it was a load of mental shit. Load of mental shit was happening in it.
Oh, okay. Don't come out in the UK for years after release.
I can't remember what happened, but like it was him with like some other women in it. Like I don't know if he was having sex with them or what. But in the video. If I remember right, in the video, there was an extensive bit where he was like trying to put across the point that he'd had sex with Paris Hilton. But I was like, he's going on about it a bit too much. You can clearly tell that he hasn't.
Yeah.
He was off his nut a little bit.
You wouldn't know if she goes to another school.
Yeah, she lives up where my nan lives, up north. Paris Hilton. Yeah. Always at it. We were like rabbits.
She wouldn't admit to it if you ask her now, obviously.
No.
It's a sacred trust, but
exactly. She'll never admit it. She'll take it to her grave.
I just imagine that in his alleged sex tape, that he'd want puns in there, wouldn't he? Probably about having like, oh, you don't look like satisfied. Looks like you need more size. Or should
you need more size. He's built like an absolute unit in this film. Like he's got a massive trench coat on, which
and
I feel like would fit.
Kafuga.
Massive, yeah. Massive kafuga, but yeah.
Yeah, he's good in this. I thought he plays the, not going to say supernatural detective, the detective who's superstitious. He's very superstitious. He's like, he's got a lucky bullet. It seems very 90s, that idea of someone having a quirk. Like they're a normal detective character, but then they've got a quirk. So this one's superstitious. He's
like a prop, yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't like to step over bodies, doesn't like to walk on the ladders, smash
black
mirrors.
Cats. There is a cat. There is a cat jump scare in this film, right?
There's a cat jump scare that is accompanied by like about 7 or 8 hits on the violin. It keeps going. Unless the video I was watching was just glitched out, but it did feel like that sting went on for quite a while.
And then I think he says, "What the hell was that?" He's like, "No, oh, don't cat. Worry about it. It was just a bit of cat."
Yeah, but if it's a black cat, surely he'd be the one worrying about it. He'd be the one freaking his pants off.
I don't think he got the jump scare, actually. So.
No, okay.
I think this is a long-suffering assistant, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, like I said, I was pretty confused, mainly around the whole first half an hour of the film. We open with like tribal drums, and there's a guy called John Whitney, who's, I guess he's like the Bruce Parry Brian Parry, one is. So he's anthropologist living with the natives, doing ayahuasca ceremonies, and
he has a glass of leaf juice, doesn't he? And then goes mad because he sees Shikaka. No, yeah. That's
Shikaka.
And everyone. Kathoga?
Kalula.
Singaya?
So Kathoga is like the name that they give to essentially the creature, right?
Yeah.
But there's. So it means he who walks on all fours. Right. So he drinks the cup of soup that they make for him, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh no, beef and onion.
Yeah. it's scald not as well. He's like, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he has like a moment, obviously, where he's a little bit scared, and all the tribesmen are like, ah, we stitch you right up, mate. You never know what's coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, spiked.
You've been spiked, mate.
So he does, and then he boxes up, here's how I understand it, he boxes up some leaves with the fungus in and sends it back to the museum, but he doesn't want it to go back, so he goes to stop it from going back.
But then tries to bribe the captain. He says, oh, them boxes, they can't go back, I'll pay you. And the captain kind of goes, I'm really busy, mate, but don't worry, we'll look after your boxes.
Yeah.
And then just goes.
Yeah.
And then John Whitney just sort of goes in the boxes.
Goes in the boxes, and the boxes are on. But as it sets off, the boxes are still on the.
They're on the docks because the boxes are open. So just got Chinese rugs in them, and they've come from South America. So I don't know how they pulled that off. And he's like, goes, "No!"
He goes, "Oh, blooming heck!"
Yeah, wait. So the boxes don't make it to America, do they?
They go by air freight later, because
So
he does that, and then we see him just like lamenting that the boxes aren't there, they're just full of rugs.
Okay.
And then we see the boat arrive, and then just in a side comment, then the costume design lady just says, oh yeah, these came in by air freight, they just got left on the dock, so they flew them over much quicker anyway. I don't know why I didn't ship everything like that.
it's a little bit of a convoluted sort of beginning, isn't it, for us to try and understand. For us to try and understand, first of all, what the hell's going on, and second of all, like, understand where this creature comes from, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I guess it's supposed to be that way, so we find out as, you know, the doctor, the biologist, at the museum starts finding out, we find out at the same time as she does. But still, it's a bit of a convoluted beginning where you're like, what?
To understand how he gets there, though, Ben, you're going to need to understand about the history of Chicago and the coal tunnels, because that is instrumental.
Luckily, I know everything there is to know.
For you to understand how it all works out.
Yeah.
So we see the boat comes into the docks, right? We leave Shikaka and all those guys over there.
Yeah.
Chicago. And we go to Chicago.
Yeah.
And then we see the boat arriving, and it's like the... it's like the Dracula ship, the Demeter, isn't it? It turns up and it's a ghost ship. Everyone's gone.
Obviously, everyone is missing their heads.
The end of the Lost World.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A boat with no living crew manages to park at the... Maybe, I don't know, I'm not a sailor. I'll say that now. maybe boats are really easy to park, and I'm being unfair.
Well, I think they just sort of... You just sort of let them float into the parking spot, right?
It's like the Button Moon spaceship. You just press a button. America, and then it goes.
Maybe the captain, like, he parked it up, and then he just went, oh, I'm dead now as well.
Yeah.
With his last ounce of strength.
Yeah.
Shit, so put it in the sat nav.
So everyone's dead on that. We're introduced to Vincent D'Agosta.
D'Agosta.
He's our cool detective guy. Him and his partner, they search on the deck. They sniff out severed head with like no eyeballs and stuff.
In the bilge.
In the bilge.
In the bilge, yeah, which is the horrible, dirty, great.
I had to Google that because I wasn't sure what a bilge was. So I had to Google it. I'm still not really sure what it is.
But, it's a horrible low bit of the boat where all the filth and muck is.
Okay.
And they find all the dead bodies, severed heads, and all that filth.
I feel sorry for his assistant there, who's like, oh, I've searched the ship before you arrived, done a really good job of it. And then they get scared by the cut. He goes, oh, is this the bilge? Opens it, literally, tons of bodies.
Tons of bodies. Oh, God damn it. I've already filled out the paperwork.
Start over.
And then we move on to our other main character, Dr. Margot Green, who is getting dressed outside of the museum. She's got a top off, and there's little kids perving.
Those little kids, sons of bitches. Because they're all talking about wagging the school, but they're going to go on the field trip first.
For American listeners, wagging is like playing hooky. I think that's what they call it over there.
Bunking off, anybody?
Bunking off, yeah. Skiving.
Truancy.
Wait, Ben, did you say wagging down in Bristol?
No, bunking off for me.
Oh, bunking off. Remember that? We had skiving and wagging.
Skiving was there, yeah. Skiving and bunking off.
Yeah.
Wagging.
The wagging, just, when I hear it now, I said, what? But back in the days, that's what you did. You wagged. You wagged it.
You wagged and wagged off.
If you were bad boys, like, what are their names? Eugene and something else, Joseph or Jason or something like that. They're no good, and assassin Dr. Green. So, no, what are you a doctor of? Being like an idiot? And she's like, fuck off, kids.
We bunked off and we gone to the museum. You know that? We gone to the museum because we're just absolute legends.
Eugene's got a good point, though, because his mate wants to wag off early and he's like, no, we should go to the museum because we can't go to the arcade now anyway. And he goes, oh, fair dues. Go to the museum.
Yeah, so they go to wag off and get some learning, some after school learning.
We're gonna wag off at the museum where all of our school has gone anyway on a field trip.
Yeah.
But we're not gonna hang out with them. We're gonna be doing our own thing in the museum.
Yeah. So screw them, okay?
You don't want to look at the giraffes. You want to look at the whales. Look at the giraffes whenever I want, mate. And the teacher mostly just shouts, don't run, literally about 10 times. And then it goes into the museum and the security guard's telling the kids not to run.
Yeah.
So watch the car. I'm glad I ain't got kids. Idiots always running.
Egypts.
These, I don't think these kids last that long anyway, do they? So we're introduced to Dr. Frock, who's Margot Green's boss, mentor, lover. We don't find out. But they get a shipment of boxes from John Whitney. They've got the leaves with the fungus in there, and they're like, these are very interesting. I think they're packing leaves, but they've got like interesting, like little sweets or something that look quite tasty. Little fungus balls. And then at the Birmingham and stuff, there's also some statues that have come in. So this is another thing, there's a lot of shots of this for people like prepping statues that don't really seem to go anywhere. Like, I remember there's lots of shots of these little Gafuga statues that get in.
Yeah, they're kind of getting ready, aren't they? Because their big exhibit is about to start on superstitions.
Superstitions.
And then the two things that are arriving in these two boxes are one is the statue of Gafuga.
Yeah.
And the other is just a box full of leaves. And then all these people that are all scientists say, oh, just leaves and that one empty. Idiot John Whitney. Oh, well, this can't be important. Ignore that. Burn them up. But they do let Margot keep one of them.
You get to keep one leaf.
So you keep one for testing.
You can have one leaf.
Bin all the others. And I guess the other thing that comes out of that scene is that Margot is furious because the Blastoise Foundation, that isn't their real name, the Blastoise Foundation are going to release their grant and she needs it to keep her research going. But slimy Greg... no good Greg is he's after that grant, even though he's already had a grant and he's a piece of shit for doing it, even though, as Greg points out, you know, he's allowed to apply for another grant. Maybe his work that we don't know anything about is very expensive, but he's painted as the villain.
He could be trying to cure, you know, there could be reasons. He is a dicker, but there are reasons for that. Like, he, you know, he's
dog eat dog out there
studying at the museum, all right? Cure children that are on fire. No one knows.
No one knows. It's like how Captain Planet never asks, like, does loot and plunder pollute his factory because he's like, you know, it's the cure for cancer.
Yeah.
That he's working on. But no, Greg
is a backstory for this villain.
Yeah.
But no, he's just a weaselly little man, apparently. He's just a smarmy, so we should hate him.
He's just a smarmy guy who's gonna be fodder for the monster.
And he wants all the funding because he's very selfish, and he's gonna take it from the Blastoise Foundation, whether Margo's happy with it or not.
I will say there is a lot of characters in this which are pretty much just fodder for the monster. But they're introduced like seconds before, well, 30 seconds or so before they die normally.
Yeah.
So like that night, I think we get our first monster attack. And we get our second instance of a guy trying to do his business on the toilet and being murdered. Because I mean, that happened in Deep Rising with a tentacle this time.
You're smoking a tab, weren't
he? Yeah, he's punching a few darts in the toilet.
You're smoking a cheeky tab, and he's literally, as soon as he opens the window as well. So, I mean, he's, first of all, he's doing it in the toilet. Second of all, he's opened the window.
Yeah.
So he's polite, you know?
Yeah. And then someone's trying to grab his sneakers. He's like, just ask, man. And
I wonder why he's doing that. Like, I know he's at work, but it's the 90s. You could probably smoke in hospital then.
Yeah.
It's a different time.
You could smoke while you're performing surgery.
Tapping out ash in the open wound.
Yeah. Not in the museum, though, I guess, because, you know, you might make the dinosaurs go
stink
yellow.
Stink up the bones, yeah. Exactly. So he gets murked. It's a technical
term. He gets murked. He gets decapitated as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. This. So the next morning, I think it cuts pretty close when DeGusta's looking in there. And so there's a brain.
Oh, he's found the kids, hasn't he? Yeah, the kids. Because the kids are still in the thing. They're back again
for more learning.
And then they're still there. And they've stayed in the museum after it's closed.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, shouldn't we call for help or something? They go, no, because then we'll get busted for wagging school. And it's like, so you just live in the museum now? But then
that's their life now. Their museum
after
children.
After we see Smokey Joe get done in the toilets, we think maybe the beast has got them, but then it cuts to the next morning and they're traumatized.
That's a bit of a weird bit. They kind of look up in the rafters and then it zooms right in on one of them. And then I think, oh, did they die? I even had to rewind it to see if I thought one of them died, but no,
they just got spooked.
They survived.
Yeah.
They got spooked, and then all the police are around the next day.
You know why, though? Because Gifoga's seen someone smoking a joint in the museum and he's like, he's dead. So these two kids just trying to learn, like they're positive influence on society. So Kafuga's like,
"Good guys, you got no interest."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I'll let you pass.
Moral tale. Yeah, but yeah. So there's a brain on the floor the next morning.
There's a brain on the floor, and there's a really stupid bit where like Dr. Margot ends up like stumbling in.
Feel like someone's been murdered in there. This is the men's toilets. Why would you even want to go in there?
Because she's like, can I just borrow a...
can I just borrow a toilet roll?
Exactly what
can I borrow some bug roll, please?
Because that literally, he wants to... And first, DeCosta does a little bit of everyday sexism. Because he's like, yeah, let me talk to Dr. Green. Send him to see me immediately. And then he goes to see it. And it's like, Dr. Green, Margot comes to see him. And he's like, who are you, love? I was wanting to talk about Doc, and then like the other police sergeant is like, oh, this is Dr. Green. He's like, oh!
Are you Dr. Green's secretary or something? Can you go and get me? Go and sort my dry cleaning out, love. Fucking hell.
After she's brought to him, he like says, yeah, I want to ask you some questions, but not now because I'm doing a murder, even though I sent for you. And then he goes in to investigate, and then the bit you were talking about, Ben. She walks directly into the murder scene and then flips out.
Siren head.
Skids on a brain.
he goes, what?
She loses.
Typical
it.
Women overreacting.
Always lose your shit. You see one person with a head off and their brain popped out.
God. I saw heads off yesterday. I saw five heads off yesterday. I'm fine. All right?
This is nothing to me. Desensitized to it.
Exactly.
DeGusta, did they think there's a connection between? They must think there's a connection between.
They think there's a connection. They think there's like a killer, basically, like a killer on the loose. Someone who's going to make Jeffrey Dahmer look like a Boy Scout. I think they say at one point. I'm like, whoa, steady on, Jesus.
Yeah.
So basically, he wants to have the upcoming exhibition, like stopped and the museum closed. But obviously, Dr. Anne Cuthbert, who was played by Linda Hunt, tiny, tiny lady.
Yeah.
From The Incredibles, right?
I don't know. I don't think it's actually here, but she's based that character on.
Yeah. Based on her.
But yeah. She's also another 90s horror connection. In she's an NCIS variant, isn't she? Where she's Ladies Love Cool James's boss.
Oh.
Yeah. And remember One Cut of the Dead, Ben?
Yeah.
That TV exec looked like an Asian version of her.
Definitely. Definitely. What, the one where I had racist subtitles on?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah. Well, they've closed down the exhibition. I think
DaGosta wants to, and the science boss lady is very unhappy about it. She's already got the catering done. She says to DaGosta, "You got to get this caterer. Otherwise, have you ever had those little salmon things? Those little bits of toast?" He's like, "Nah, mate, I don't think I have." And he's like, "Well,
just
there's going to be fucking loads. Yeah. If you take,
it's going to be fucking loads. And if you and if you close this down, I'm going to make you eat them all." I don't care what you say. I'm going to sit down and make you eat them all.
Mini pizzas.
Quiche. Goujons.
Goujons.
That's what she says. Bloody goujons.
Goujons. I've got 3 tons of pink wafers at the back, all right?
So this bloody thing is happening, or you're for it, mate, for the eye jump.
But at the same time, she's like, hang on a sec, I'm going to look at these leaves again to calm down. She goes on about these leaves so often about she just goes on about hormones all the time. There's hormones in them. Just think of
this is where Margot has done her. She puts it in a machine that does the experiment and tries to look into these things. And she has the most 90s thing in this entire movie, which is customized sounds on your windows. So on Windows, when you put some, because when the test finishes, it does the sound of a car crash. And like a little, it does a little smash, like a skid and a smash. And I'm like, I remember customizing my Windows start up and close down sounds.
I don't think that was the film. I thought maybe Cat had something on the Mac upstairs or something. I just heard that car crash. Like, what the fuck is that?
It went out into the street, ready to help. Is everybody okay?
Yeah, I would never.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Yeah, but it as a PC doing it.
Well, obviously, what happens, is this before when like a tiny insect crawls into all of her samples at one point with the leaves and the hormones and all that shit? And obviously, she leaves it to incubate in her fridge for a while, and obviously when she goes to take the samples out, suddenly there's a massive, great, big, horrible, mutated insect which she just squishes.
Like any scientist, she immediately smashes the thing into oblivion. Yeah. I think that's a little later. I think around now we just get the beginnings of when we're cleaning the bones for exhibit, we use these bugs to eat the meat off them, and then someone goes, some of the bugs have escaped. He goes, oh well, sure, that won't come back till later.
Yeah. I think this is a bit of a prequel to Starship Troopers as well. The bugs in it. Also, that bug like would be a great food source. You know, if you can make a bug grow like that, ripen up overnight. But I think it's this time where Detective D'Agusta, Jesus Christ, Detective D'Agusta gets the head examined.
He goes to the autopsy, doesn't he? And there's the very sassy...
She's like a stand-up comedian. Like constantly pumping out lines.
She is. Yeah. For someone who has a very grim job, she's like, his brain's light, even for a guy's brain. Am I right? And she's like, got a silent assistant. She's nudging him.
Yeah.
And then he says something like, don't you agree? And he's like, yes. He's like, I can never shut that fucker up.
Yeah.
So they find out that like the hypothalamus has been extracted from the brain, which is a bit of the brain, which has got enzyme in it. What? Is
it, that it? It regulates your body temperature and is... chock full of delicious hormones.
It's basically delicious. It's basically the most delicious part of the brain. Somebody is eating or just taking this bit of the brain, you know, which is weird. It's weird, isn't it? Just like the body's in the shit, though.
It's missing from that one, and he gets his long-suffering assistant to check the autopsies to see if that's true of all of them.
Yeah.
God, I mean, imagine getting that phone call. Bet. Can you just check all these brains to see if they've been... Oh, for fuck's
and he gives
him Nando's.
He'd be glad he was in Nando's because D'Agusta, little bit of a son of a bitch, isn't he? He says when he phones his assistant to get him to check the brains, he goes, it's me. Hope I interrupted your dinner. I bet he's on the other line.
Halfway through his pot noodle. Like, it's going to go cold.
He's got a pot noodle and two Finders crispy pancakes he's just about to tuck into.
It's probably the first thing he's been able to eat after finding a bilge full of dead bodies. He was like, probably in the mood for some Finders now. Come on. And he's like, all right, hope I interrupted your dinner. Go and look at them brains some more. He's like,
go look at those brains, mate.
They don't link it up straight away, did they? But I think they send a couple of policemen down into the coal chutes to look for...
To have a look, because the museum is inexplicably connected to a huge network of tunnels that go under the entire city, and they're going to find out who might be hiding in the museum, because otherwise all that food that's been gotten by the caterers is going to go to waste. So they're down there looking.
Yeah. But then they get attacked by a homeless man.
There's like a homeless dude who basically hears police coming. So he goes, is that police coming? I know what I'll do. I'll go,
I'll jump out like a civilian in Virtue a Cop. There's another 90s reference for you.
Hey, don't shoot!
So that's exactly what happens. He gets pumped full of lead.
And he's got like an axe. He's got a couple of hypothalamus lying around. Like he's like, he looks pretty suspicious.
Orgy of evidence that this is definitely the guy.
Yeah,
he's got the security guard's wallet on him, hasn't he?
I wonder where he got that from.
Yeah, exactly. He's just been milling about and he nicked it. So basically, everybody is like, right, case closed, that's it. But obviously, Detective D'Agusta, I ain't so sure.
I'm not so sure about this orgy of evidence.
Yeah, and one of the dudes, the museum's head of security guy, does a real dick move and goes, right, you don't want the case closed, eh? I'll get my mate on the phone. Gets his mate, the mayor, on the phone and goes, all right, mate, you looking forward to coming to the opening tonight? Yeah.
And then the mayor's like, I'm looking forward to my wife's cleavage. Cleavage. my wife's got boobs. Did I mention my wife's got boobs?
This comes back a little bit later. I'll mention it now. The mayor's chatting on. He phones up and he's straight away, he's giving him a power play, isn't he? He phones him and says, all right, what's your name? It's like, oh, it's Lieutenant D'Agusta. Is this your first name? It's like, oh, it's like Jim. So, oh, do you mind if I call you Jim? It's like, yeah, sure. You can call me Your Honor, the Mayor, Your Majesty. You can call me that. Anyway, and he talks about his wife's cleavage and said, oh, everyone's seen my wife's cleavage. What won me the election? Later on, his wife is in the film at the dress he mentions. Spoilers, the gala goes ahead.
Yeah.
And by modern standards, I'd say that dress is not as outrageous as he makes out. It's quite a sensible evening.
He oversold it, didn't he? He oversold it.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with showing like a little bit of cleavage, but that mare made out like it was something obscene, and it was not at all. It was just a nice evening dress.
Low cut.
No, I'd say
he's
quite
obsessed. They go, all right, mare.
He's implying it'd be like nipple singlets and like a belt.
The mare really is selling his wife like a piece of meat here,
yeah,
to the voters, obviously. And in the reality, she seems, from all accounts, just a normal, classy, professional woman out on dinner.
Yeah.
There we go. So basically,
in your face, then
Augusta is still like convinced. Obviously, something is not quite right. So he orders a lockdown at the museum, all except for the main exhibition hall, and then he's got like police presence pretty much throughout.
He lets them open it, doesn't he? But then he'll say, because basically the mayor here is the mayor from Jaws. Effectively, it's like murders. No, open it anyway because I've got social plans.
Pretty much. Exactly.
But yeah, you're right. D'Agosta insists that the police will all be there. That's all right. They'll wear suits. They'll fit in. But they're going to continue searching, and they're going to bring more dogs down into the tunnels to look for the real murderer.
So obviously, right up until this point, pretty much they're just looking for a dude, looking for a crazy dude who likes taking heads off and eating brains.
First mistake.
Don't assume.
And then we get maybe the part of the film that probably put a fair few people off with the dogs. No one likes to see a dog get beheaded. But so they're searching around the basement. One of the two dogs run away. You hear one of them cry. It's dead. And then the other one, it's just like lost its confidence.
Runs off for a bit. Yeah.
It's a bit shy.
I had to pause the film and give my dogs a hug at that point. I was like, it's okay.
Yeah.
Did any of you catch the dogs' names?
They're like a Greek mythology name or something, right? Aren't they,
you've already immediately showed yourself to have more class than me, Luke. Their names are Castor and Pollux. And I was like, this all came out before Face Off. It didn't. Face Off came out just after, but then
Castor,
I looked
Troy.
It up, Luke, and yeah, Castor and Pollux Troy. It's as you say, it's a Greek myth thing, and I think there's something to do with Gemini as well, the star sign. But I only learned that after Googling it to find out that Face Off came out after this movie.
Well, I like to come across as smart, but this is part of the trivia, not the questions that I've picked, but it was just part of the trivia research. So I don't know anything. I'm stupid. But and then the dogs get killed. A guy gets killed. And then
one of the searchmen, right?
Yeah. But D'Agosta sees that it's not a human thing right now. He knows that it's creature.
D'Agosta, I think by now the opening of the museum is in full swing and the new exhibit, the mayor and his wife and the Blastoise couple that run that foundation.
Just picturing actual Blastoises now in evening gowns and
Blastoises, Greg Fett,
flutes of champagne.
Yeah. I guess the bit, maybe this hasn't happened yet. So Margot has been doing a research and she wanted to show the her mentor, the professor, and Professor X, the findings that she's had about the mixed DNA that's in these samples, because she's finding plant and animal in there all together. And D'Agosta has let them keep the main exhibition open, but they're going to lock up the side rooms. That's what we're talking about. And then nasty old Greg gets them trapped in there. That's what we're going to go through, because it's important.
Yeah, nasty old Greg. See, at this point, it seems like Greg's like going, come on, guys, you got to get yourself out of there now, because I don't want to just, you know, get the grant on my own. Like, I need a bit of competition or something. Did he say that at one point?
Yeah, he kind of comes along, doesn't he? And he's like, oh, you're going to come to this party then? Because, you know, don't let me just sweep the Blastoise money away from you. And she's like, nah, I'll be along in a minute. I'll be along in a minute. But then she's kind of obsessed with the, with like all the bug DNA that she's been looking
all
at.
The hormones, hormones keeps talking about. Yeah.
They are getting results at this point. They are getting results at this point, aren't they? Where they find out like it's what, like insect and
part reptile.
Insect and Sub-Zero and reptile
Do they find out it's got a human in it yet? Is that yet?
No, not yet.
No, that's a little bit later.
They haven't got his juice yet.
I thought they found out it was human, but they weren't sure who.
Well, later on, they get the bug juice from... because he secretes, as he's bashing something against the door, she's like mops up his juices with her bubble wrap.
That's a little bit later, isn't it? So that's when she gets that which human it is.
Yeah.
But for now, she's showing the professor. And meanwhile, because DaGosta has said, okay, all the police are going to be here, but you can open the main exhibition bit, but you're going to close down all of the labs at the side. So they go, oh, fair play then. And then I think, is it one of the policemen or is it head of museum security?
I think it's a policeman.
Asshole Tom. And they go, Greg, yeah. Weaselly, sleazily Greg, comes along and says, oh, I've just been there. No one there, mate. Lock it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, lock it down in a way that like no one can raise the alarm.
Yeah.
Completely seal the area.
Seems a bit mental to just seal off an area completely, I guess, but you know.
I'm sure if the police were gonna be there, like if they were closing a bit of the museum, you just stand a guy there and they go, close, sorry, not somehow hermetically seal the room.
Yeah. And then obviously while the exhibition thing is going on, a headless body of somebody falls to the ground. This is the second film in a row that we've talked about on this podcast where the crowds go wild and literally have scant regard for anyone else and just literally run over people's heads.
Yeah.
Smash into people, escape the museum.
Goes into the rotating door and she gets squished.
Gets a blood like nose, doesn't she?
As they're all escaping. I don't know if it's just... As they're all escaping, I was like, oh, this is like the Gloucester cheese wheel hunt.
Yeah.
There's a sort of rolling down the stairs.
Right, there goes the cheese. Fucking got it! Jumping head first into things. It also struck me as like if that happened, a headless body fell and smashed. Like, I don't know if I'd immediately panic.
No, you wouldn't. This is the thing. You'd be like, unless you saw the creature.
Unless you saw the creature and thought, I'm next,
yeah.
You would just go, what was that? There's a head. What was that first doing? Of all, I'd think, yeah. What was that doing out there? First of all, you'd be like, ain't real. It's part of this exhibition. Second of all, if it was confirmed that it's real, you'd be like, what the fuck? What the hell's going on? Where's that come from?
Yeah.
I don't think your initial thought would be at any point to just sprint towards the nearest exit.
Yeah.
Literally punching people in the head to get them out of the way.
In our society, I think we're all very familiar from a young age with like drills and evacuating safely. But like the guys, as soon as like the... one dead body falls from the ceiling onto some spikes, they go full on Buster Keaton. They literally, it's reptile, Mortal Kombat wise, he gets knocked off the pit, uppercutted off, down onto the spikes, and then literally everyone, they must have blown their stuntman budget because these guys are tumbling.
Some guy does like a Liu Kang flying kick through the door.
Yeah, he does that, and then someone does like a split kick over the top of someone and they tumble down the stairs.
OTT, these guys. Yeah. Jeez, is it just because they're the rich and the famous or whatever, you know?
Yeah, idiots. Maybe.
Idiots, man.
All that money, not an ounce of class. And even before they get out the door and get down the museum, the stone museum steps, there's a bit in the lobby where they're all tripping over like velvet rope. And it's like, you know, like velvet museum, do not cross rope. They're tumbling over that. Just go round.
People literally like that's this whole film is just about the horrors of that, of not knowing how to evacuate properly.
Well, so the doors are closing and there's still some people left in, and I can't remember, the policeman tries to stop the door by putting like a wooden chair.
DaGosta gets back he has come out of he's rescued the other dog and he's come back up to the main bit. Is it size? I don't know who it is. It's a policeman, you're right. And then you're right, he gets the wooden chair and he does like he slides across the thing, sliding it. But who would have thought it? That flimsy wooden chair.
This massive steel door is coming down. I'm just going to stop it with a meringue. Just a single meringue. With a single shredded wheat. Just there. Oh, that wasn't substantial enough.
This origami chair. Intact.
Yeah. An origami crane. I'm gonna just come on.
Can you imagine if like the museum lady had gone, that was Jesus's chair, the most valuable
that was a chair Jesus sat on when he used to play computer games, you idiot. Yeah,
he made that with his dad Joseph, not God.
Him and his dad made that. You mug. Crushed.
So
yeah, and now we get like
sorry, I was going to say, then the situation of the people trapped inside, Sizemore is somewhere in the tunnels, and then Wheels and
Professor X
and the woman Jean Grey, they're in the lab somewhere, stuck there, and then there's a monster, and the monster,
they're locked in because of Greg.
And the monster seems to have developed the ability to teleport around the museum, depending on who needs to die next.
Impossibly quickly, right? Because it's all gone awry, because all this happens when the doors close. It's because the computers and the power in some part of the facility have gone wrong for what appears to be no apparent reason, because there's two technician guys going, oh, the fire's going off, and then there's robberies, and then it says we're having an earthquake, and then Dennis Nedry comes up on the screen like, and then
they get Rickrolled.
It's just because there's a Kafoga loose in the museum. The security system literally has no protocol for that.
It just goes, what the fuck is going on?
It sets them all off, and then the guy basically says, I can't get Jurassic Park back online without Dennis Nedry. And says, oh, well, go and reset the power. And thankfully, it isn't down this corridor of pipes. It's just literally the next room. And the fella goes, oh, don't lock the door there, mate. I fucking hate it when you do that. And then he goes to the next room where the power is. And then it turns out that Kathogo has smashed the fuse box. He's given it a fist in. It's been busted.
So Kathogo... Let's try and describe what this creature looks like for people who maybe not seen this film. So it's like a reptilian cat.
It's like a lion fours. Chameleon.
Yeah. Lion chameleon with like insectoid mandibles.
Yeah.
And it's got like a weird black Mohican.
Yeah.
And like a fluffy tail.
Oh, it's got quite a fluffy face as well, right? Is it?
It's like a predator's face.
Yeah. I feel like it's a Komodo dragon with like the head, you know, the drumming Muppet. It's got like that kind of head on it for some reason.
Yeah.
But with the predator jaws.
Animal face, predator jaws,
and
beetle mandibles.
They've definitely reused the velociraptor feet, but bigger.
Yeah.
Its feet, right?
It's a weird one. Is it scary? I think it's interesting. I mean, I still don't understand how it just keeps lopping people's heads off, because it has like a weird way of doing it. Like it's
mandibles.
It locks on, and then this seems the heads just seem to screw around. I don't know what happens, and it just unscrews people's noggins.
I think it is kind of scary, just because it's so strange.
So yeah,
I think
that's what's scary about insects. I don't understand how their mouths work. How are they biting stuff? Because they don't have like chompers like that. I don't really understand it. Yeah, so I know what you mean. It's scary in that sense.
It's scary because it's strange, and I guess you kind of think, like, what the hell is this thing? And like every glimpse of it you get, you kind of see a new...
It's a little bit different every time you see it. It's much like the story of the seven blind men and the elephant. Like, you might see the tail.
Exactly like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of like, even the CGI, because it's so dark, I suppose every time you see it, and even when it's CGI, it still kind of looks legit.
It's all right, isn't it? Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So there's
it's busted the electrics basically, and then the dude goes back in, and then his mate, who he told not to lock the door, if he had maybe been fine, he's had his head locked off, and then he gets it as well, so they can't get Jurassic Park back online or the museum because it's not happening, and it's raining inside now because the sprinklers have gone off, and this is where DeGosta gets on the phone to the mayor and says, right, you're coming out through the tunnels. I don't care that you don't want to walk through the water. You can fire me on Monday, but for now, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
I'm in charge around here.
And it works. They, like, half of them try to escape that way.
Sleazy Greg stays in the lobby with the Blastoises because he's going to...
He's laughing at their jokes and stuff.
Yeah, and he's going to get funding. He does that, doesn't he? Yeah.
Around about now, the SWAT team arrives.
Kathoga comes to eat some of the rich folk. I think he eats Greg at this point, and he has a look. He has a fake out scare, doesn't he? He runs away because the policeman who stayed in the lobby gets eaten by Kathoga, gets his head off, and then
This looks pretty good. The CGI, like with the deaths and stuff, look pretty legit. They don't look too ridiculous.
This is the point where we first see the monster, like, full body, right? We see all of it because it chases Greg into the darkness of the exhibit.
Yeah.
And he sees his face in a broken mirror. And he's like, oh, no, it's just me.
It's just me.
And then there's a monster behind him and he gets got. Serves you right for being ambitious, Greg. And then we see the SWAT team, as you say, they start coming down. And we sort of have... This is where the film sort of goes from Alien to Aliens, right? Because then you've got full-blown action scene.
Yeah.
The SWAT team come through the roof and immediately all get chumbled up by...
It's one of those things where the SWAT team seem to come down to a certain degree, like halfway down, and then go, oh, fuck, get me up.
Well, there's three SWAT team members. Well, there's four SWAT team members. One goes down and gets set off. The other one goes down and then he gets, like, plucked out of the sky, and then the third one goes down, but then decides to go back up, and he gets his body chopped off, which tends to happen. He pulls him up.
This looks pretty legit as well. Him coming up in half.
But then the guy next to him does the
yeah.
Oh, he like looks at the sky.
Yeah. Like, the first thing you do is go, "What the fuck has just happened?" And maybe run away because whatever it was that locked him in half might get you next. But you're gonna go. No!
I'd like to see the backstory.
He was one day away from retirement.
Jerry, there's like a love story happening there. They were going to escape together that night.
Yeah.
Yeah, but oh,
the museum's being robbed. We'll go and sort this out and then we'll leave together. And then, he gets locked in half. And he goes very quiet when he gets locked in half. He's like, get me out.
Yeah. I wonder how long you live for after you've been...
It must be a weird feeling, though. Must be unpleasant. Oh!
Well, he didn't even say, oh! He just went...
I imagine it's like you've done a very large explosion. You know what I mean? Like, you've done a very large... You've passed a very large...
His poor mate, though, screaming. Or it's not his mate, maybe his lover. My lover was killed by a half-lizard demigod.
Yeah.
By a lizard, by a reptilian demigod.
In therapy, when they're talking about they're like past trauma.
It'll go on to Jerry Springer in a couple of months. My lover was killed by a reptilian
demigod. There's a guy runs on wearing like a demigod costume.
And like, he's here tonight. You're going to face him. And he comes back in. And then like that Steve guy's holding him back. And he's
you killed my lover. You cut him in half. I had to eat the bloody hypothalamus thing. I had to do it.
Why did you eat the bottom off then, dickhead? That's a liar. The lie detector shows that is untrue.
I wanted the brain as well, but it's all I could get. Fucking hell.
You were yanking him up.
So at this point, that's all happening. And then the ones in the basement running away through the tunnels are on the phone to DeGusta, and they're like, yeah, he's tailing us. And I'm like, he's not tailing you. He's in the SWAT room.
He's eating the people in the lobby. Do go back and forth because, like, literally, Cthogo's face might have come up and gone,
It literally, as soon as he was finished with the SWAT team, he just went, fucking run!
Well, yeah, run! He runs there. That weird, like, cartoon noise. And he makes it to them, and then he lops off a blonde woman's head. And then he turned around and he's gone back again. He's gone somewhere else.
Yeah, he's slurping people off under the water. He gets a couple of people down there.
Yeah.
He has people's heads off. Does he always like stop and eat the brain? It seems like he's just cutting heads off and leaving them. Wasteful.
He's like, save him. Like, kill him now, eat the brains later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless it's part of the process of him taking a head off. He's like sort of ripping up into the... hypothalamus. I've never done it myself.
Maybe the head comes off as a side effect, and once he's got that bit, maybe that's like like the linchpin of keeping your head on. Once you've had
just
drops off.
He's just addicted to hypothalamus, isn't it? He needs to go cold turkey.
He's a hypothalamus junkie. He can't get enough.
Yeah, some people are addicted to bass. He's addicted to hypothalamus.
I think at some point there's been a discussion at some point, because then between running in the lobby and running down into the coal tunnels, which have existed in historic Chicago since the late 1800s, run right down to the docks from the museum.
Yeah.
He's run back to the labs where those people are hermetically sealed in. Remember, they couldn't get to the main party. He's seen them and he's trapped them in the room. because he was at the door and he ran and they closed the door, and that's when he bashes the door and cuts himself because Margot grabs his juice on the Kleenex and puts it into the machine. So that's already happened. Then after he's slurped those people off in the water, he goes back up there. he goes back up to the top, and he gets Professor X.
The guy tries to use his mind to fight back. He does that.
But he's got one of the helmets on. He's 2% Magneto.
You don't need my hypothalamus. I'm old. It's all dried out. And he goes, I'll have it anyway.
to be fair, I don't think that guy is that unhappy about it. He's having a big old smile isn't he?
He's just happy to see, because he's got a theory about the Mephisto principle or something. Evolution happens through grotesques of DNA, which I sort of agree with in a way. But he's just happy to see it in person, I think, and then he dies. And then he's like, I immediately regret liking it a second ago. Yeah.
He's a little bit horny for it. He's like, whoa, God, you sexy bitch!
I wouldn't have... I don't care. Like, I'm not, again, much like I'm not a sea captain, I'm not a scientist myself, but even if I really loved science, if I loved animals, if I was David Attenborough into animals and I saw one that was going to eat me, I still might think, oh, no.
If you like really love roller coasters, you love roller coasters more than anything in the world, but they were like, this fantastic roller coaster, but it lops your head off at the end. Like, there's a bar. Like, you would just go, nah, skip that one.
Yeah. Can I just watch the video?
I won't do that one. Yeah.
You've
got to
be this short to ride to get under the thing.
Yeah, but he loved science enough, so it was just like, thank goodness, I finally can.
He looks a bit like Bill Nye, the science guy, actually.
Yeah, I can live my dream of eventually. I always said when I was growing up that the way I wanted to go was not peacefully in my sleep, but having my hypothalamus ripped out by a monster. Everyone said I was mad for wanting that, said it's very unlikely to happen. Who's laughing now?
I've had my dreams come true. Who's laughing now?
It can't be that painful. I mean, like, there's like, 10 seconds of pain and then you're gone. Like, so it can't be.
All right, you do it then, mate.
There's no nerves in your brain. So I guess your brain doesn't hurt and it gets eaten. But like the pathologist said at the start, it controls your temperature and all your hormones. You're going to be a state. You'd be too hot, too cold. You don't know what to do with yourself for those 10 seconds.
Like, I'm like that anyway. I've got no temperature control. Anyway, I'm either too hot, too cold.
You should have your hypothalamus looked at, mate. Go and tell the doctor my hypothalamus is off.
I'll go, Cafogo, Dr. Cafogo, can you have a look at my hypothalamus, please?
So it's around about
now that we find out the true identity of the Cafogo.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
she does the DNA analysis.
She knows Cafogo
dropped his wallet.
She knows it's human. She knows it's human. And then I think they are they're making their plan, and then the computer makes its customized noise again. She goes...
Yeah, there are times someone crashed outside my house again. Same people.
And then she sees that not only is it human, but it's mate John Whitney. John Whitney, son of a bitch.
He's changed.
Oh, I read that there's a in the book, the creature has got John Whitney's necklace on.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And I think in the book they think that somehow the creature has taken it as like a memento.
Yeah.
Should have had his hat.
It would like, just in his, like, in his Hawaiian shirt.
He's had his hat on. I think that would have been quite cool.
I think he's wearing a Hawaiian shirt, isn't he?
It almost feels too ridiculous for him to... For us to see him in the boat as a normal dude, and then suddenly... Like, how much time is supposed to have elapsed between him getting on the boat and realising there's loads of Chinese rugs?
Well, that insect got cafugalized in, 24 hours. So he got cafugued. I mean, he had plenty of
time. It would have been nice to have seen like some kind
transformation.
Of mid-transformation.
Like the fly.
We saw him looking all scaly and fudged.
I would have accepted him just looking a bit poorly when he was at the docks.
Yeah. But then if the book obviously tried to make it a big reveal, but this film didn't really try to make it a big reveal at all.
We knew it, John. Well, do we... I mean,
we just think it's a monster, don't we? And then it's like, John Whitney.
Yeah, it's difficult to know now because
I would have liked it if he said something like,
Hello.
All right.
Yeah, said something that only John would say.
All right, mate.
I don't know. We need to establish a catchphrase at the start.
yeah, like he had a catchphrase at the start.
That's a Whitney.
Blumenek, never knew that. That's a Whitney.
Blumenek. Yeah.
Breaks into I Will Always Love You.
Yeah.
Like another famous Whitney.
Oh, no. Rest in peace.
So I think it's all kicking towards the end now, right? So Augusta.
Yeah. They plan to freeze it. They get some liquid nitrogen, and they're like, "She says it's a bit lizard, isn't he? We'll freeze the son of a bitch."
She's like, "He's cold blooded, so he will freeze." But I'm pretty sure anything will freeze if you put liquid nitrogen.
On it. Yeah. Let's use this deadly chemical because he's a lizard. This will kill him.
Yeah.
but then that plan quickly goes out the window because it's going after the people in the tunnels again. So they go, "Right, we've got to go and get him." So then they go into the tunnels, but then the plan is quickly abandoned because the monsters come in. He shuts her in the room. Old DaGosta says, right, Margot, you stay here in the safety of the lab, and I'm going to go and freeze him. So off he goes, only for him to turn up in the lab again and for her to come up with her own plan, which is to smash all of the very, very flammable chemicals to make a bomb by putting some powder in one jar and putting some liquid in the other. I was thinking, I put on my notes on this bit, she's an evolutionary biologist, not a chemist. And why would she know what would make a bomb?
She's done a bit of chemistry here and there. She knows what makes a bomb. She's been on the dark web.
She probably did double science, didn't she, in her GCSEs? Yeah. So you do them all.
Physics and bombs.
Yeah. Oh, I did a minor in bombs because you have to do an optional.
Yeah.
So she's done that. John Whitney, as the Beast, comes and sees her, and he doesn't lop her head off quick like everyone else. Maybe because she knows him, he licks her for a bit with his gross tongue.
A bit mental, though, isn't it? Like we're made to think this was obviously a bit of a Aliens moment, or is it Alien or Alien? Do we get a bit of that in Alien 3?
Alien 3 because she's pregnant. What, no, she's
like we're supposed to think, oh, actually, he's not going to kill her because he recognizes her. No, I'm not buying that. Like he's clearly just 100% monster. There's no Whitney left in him. And this obviously, when she sort of sets him on fire, this is the only bit I thought where the CGI looked a bit dodged, didn't it?
Yeah.
CGI looked a bit.
Well, he just as soon as he got on fire, he just pops like within. Like, I don't think things do that when they're on fire. They don't.
Yeah, he gets set on fire by the by all the stuff, and then immediately she does like a 200-meter sprint to the water tank that she hides in, and he's like inches from her, but she still manages.
But
to
outrun. They outrun like the slowest explosion ever as well. This explosion just keeps. Boom, 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 and she jumps and into like a tank full of water,
and then gives him an action, like an action star finish. She's like, "You go to hell." And she's like,
"I wouldn't be so confident at that stage. I wouldn't be so confident. I'm in a tank of water, an explosion's happening.
There's a
Kafoga is there.
He's been
ready to lick your face.
He's gonna eat my hypothalamus.
He recognizes you. He's gonna give it a forked tongue." And that's that. It ends. The people escape. The people who survived the tunnels escape. And then obviously the police break into the lab, find the charred remains of the Kafoga, say that looks fucking mental. And they rescue Margot from the tank.
Yeah, she's banging along in the tank, isn't she? And then,
I like if they just kind of forgot about her. And they're like, we're going to lock this down now. What's that banging? I don't know.
It's best not to look into it. I've had enough mysteries.
Yeah.
A nice final shot as well, panning away from the...
I love it how the mayor is on side with DaGosta when they get out of the tunnels.
He says, "Go easy on DaGosta. He's had a lot."
I think the police chief's going to be like, "Oh, that guy will be back in a squad car," and he's like, "You go easy on him, mate, because he told me to fuck off today, and I respect that."
I respect him telling me to fuck off. And have you seen the Tom Sizemore sex tape? Quality.
You get down. Go on,
Peng.
For the audio listeners, Andy's dog is going right for the hypothalamus right now.
Ooh.
Right, excuse me, guys. I'm just going to let him out.
Okay.
Go on.
So, ready for some trivia?
Yes, I'm ready now. Okay. Now my hypothalamus is safe.
Number one, which Which space rapscallion turned down the role of museum rapscallion for this in this film?
Kind of in Harrison Ford again.
Harrison Ford. Oh, sorry, I think he tends to.
Could it be Harrison Ford?
Harrison Ford turned down the role of D'Agusta. The production's budget was.
He's turning down roles. Is this the same?
It's the same thing. It's the exact same situation that happened with Deep Rising.
He's like, I just don't want to be in any 90s horror. I'm holding out for.
Has he been in any horror before? What Lies Beneath? Is that horror?
Yeah, sort of like ghost, like quite horror, isn't it? Yeah. So I guess he's not a fan of monster movies and stuff. Number two, how many minutes of screen time does the Kafuga get?
Oh, interesting. Not a lot. I reckon. Ba 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 ba. 12 minutes. That feels like a lot now I've said it.
I think he gets slightly more. Are we counting his screen time for when any bit of him is in shot? I'm going to go for 15 minutes.
What about when John Winnie's in shot?
He counts.
You guys are confusing the question. It says 4 to 5 minutes on IMDb, so we're going 4 to 5 minutes. So... I think it just means actually in shot. That sounds about right. So, number three. How many heads were lopped off in the film, by my count?
So,
whoever's closest.
I'm going to go for... Quite a lot of heads get lopped off.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for... 20 heads.
Ben, what are you going for?
Ben's sitting very still.
These are on screen loppings. Oh, is Ben actually frozen? Ben has actually frozen.
Very, very still.
Okay. We asked you a question, and then you were just like thinking about it really hard for ages.
I'm not sure what happened. My internet just completely conked out.
We're nearly there. Okay, so...
Have we still just got one file or not?
Two files so far, and then this will be a third file.
Okay, now this is not the longest one ever.
Yeah. So, number three.
Right, go on.
Number three. How many heads were lopped off in the film? And this is on-screen loppings, by the way. This isn't, you know, stuff that we don't actually see off-screen. This is on-screen loppings. Andy, what are you going to go for?
I think he does quite a lot of loppings. I'm gonna go for 18 loppings.
Whoa, that's a lot. I'm gonna go considerably less.
Yeah.
I'm gonna undercut you, go for 10.
So by my count was 8 on screen loppings. There's quite a lot of stuff happening off screen where people get dragged off and really see what happens to them.
Even 8's quite a lot when you think about it.
Yeah, for one film, how many... Like, someone gets killed the same way. Do you know what I mean? They normally mix it up. Get an axe to the head, to the groin, blender or something, but no, they just
head loppings.
Lopped.
Yeah, I probably didn't adjust for the off-screen loppings. I think you might see 18 lopped heads, especially all those ones in the bilge. Maybe that's closer... Maybe I'll be closer then, but...
Yeah, maybe you need to... Go and count them, Luke, all right? All right, mate?
All right. Okay, number four. What language does the ship's captain speak?
The language of the sea.
Andy?
I mean...
Pirate.
I've heard him speak English.
Okay, well, it's a bit of a trick question. So the ship's captain at the beginning is supposed to be speaking Brazilian Portuguese. In reality, he's speaking gibberish, mixing Spanish and Portuguese with very basic grammatical structure. So he's talking nonsense. But,
Who hired this guy?
Speaking of who hired this guy, I had irreversibly the subtitles on the version of this film I managed to watch. Couldn't turn them off. And... the subtitles were, you know, very superior to the actors. They write the subtitles as espresso, but the actor definitely says, "I love an espresso myself."
Yeah, I definitely heard that. That's definitely a pet peeve of mine.
Oh,
I love an espresso, do you? You love a what?
There's a lovely coffee chat at the beginning because he mentions a mocha, a cappuccino.
And then
he goes, oh, I like an espresso myself. But you and Evan, oh, fucking hell.
Yeah. Oh, what an expert.
So this last one, it may be a little too difficult. What part of the brain is it that the Kafoga finds so tasty?
Hypothalamus.
Yeah, we talked about it way more in this episode than I thought we were going to.
Hypothalamus.
The hypothalamus. So you both got fantastic scores. I hope someone was counting. But yeah, well done.
Thanks, mate.
You're very welcome. So now we need to rate the film. I hope you carefully considered what you're going to give this classic 90s horror movie. Andy, would you like to take the reins?
You know what? I enjoyed this. I know we go through these and have a laugh at some of the sillier elements of the film, but you know what? It was a good laugh. Like Ben said at the top there, I think it's actually held up a lot better than some of these others did. Got a soft spot for it because I saw it early, and I think it's in a genre of movies that I like to. I got a little sneak back to every once in a while. So for me, I'll give it a C hypothalamus.
Oh. A C hypothalamus. Interesting.
I think I'd go one higher than that, just because I think that's got a special place in my heart. Wow, and it was Jesus one of those films Christ. That... Oh, Jesus. Can I believe it, man? Can I believe it? So I'll go for a B minus, I think, because it's a very unique creature feature. And while it's got a lot, you know, it's naff in a lot of ways, it doesn't seem to have aged particularly badly. Mm. It was still a good time. I still found it very engrossing. Yeah, let's go for a B minus, baby.
Well, you've both gone a bit higher than I thought you were going to go. I think it's good. I don't think it's amazing. I think out of all these 90s ones, I think it's definitely held up the best. So I'm going to give C minus. Hypothalamus.
Still, still pretty solid. Yeah. You know, we've all been pretty nice to the old relic.
Yeah.
Kafoga man.
I think after Deep Rising as well. Deep Rising, the more I think about it, the more sort of like kind of lame it was.
Yeah, I think maybe I gave it a C minus, but now in hindsight, maybe I was being a bit too generous.
You can give it a bit extra for Kano though, surely. And Sagat in the same movie.
I'll give it a little bit extra for those two.
Sagat, was that the mercenary?
That was Wes Studi, wasn't it?
Okay, yeah. Okay, I'll go back to that last film and rate it.
Go and watch it again, Luke.
No, I gave it a D+.
I don't want to. Okay, this show is brought to you by Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com. Become a patron over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Head over to www.hordecomics.com to check out Andy's comic books. It's like horror, Horde Comics, and my brain's gone blank. What's the other comic called, Andy?
Revenant.
I was going to say Ravenous, but that would be wrong. Thanks to Kovacs Cameron for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, give us a rating and review in iTunes, and remember to hit subscribe. Thanks to Mikoa Spen for being a right or a dude.
Thanks, Luke.
You're welcome. Thanks to Andy for being a right horror dude.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Andy.
All right. Cheers.
It's been a pleasure.
That was a long one.
Cheers, that was a long one.
Oh, man. I think it's always a bloody bad one.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.